the next part here, Perichlav Dalid, starts a new unit for us. Perichlav Dalid, chapter 24, is a segment, the beginning of a segment that runs through Prakim Chav Dalid, Chav Hei, Chav Vav, Chav Zayin. And the image here in these four chapters is divine destruction as well as salvation. And it seems to blend together victories that occur in, so to speak, normal history, where empires invade and are defeated, the type of thing that happens with the Assyrians, that happens with the Babylonians, and supernatural eschatological redemption, the end of days, Triat HaMeitim, resurrection of the dead. You get both. You know, Triat HaMeitim, the idea that the dead are going to come back to life, features in Tanakh in a few places, but this is one of the key sections. What we're going to see in chapters 24 to 27, Daniel is famous for it also. Yechezkel has his own representation of it. But what we're going to see is roughly the following. Chapter 24, destruction is coming for the entire land, and then a little bit of hope at the end. Chapter 25, gratitude to God for saving us, and an experience of national communing with God. And you're going to see some very famous psukim as part of this, as well as some incredible poetry that we are going to completely waste by not spending time on it. If you just read it through in the Hebrew without trying to translate it, the language is just unbelievable. You don't see it anywhere. You'll see. I mean, I'm going to point out a couple of things just because you can't not. But the Parachavav, chapter 26... will be a song of thanks and return to Hashem, also concluding with Triat HaMeitim, the resurrection of the dead. And then chapter 27 is going to confuse us. It's a blend of songs of thanks, descriptions of atonement, descriptions of salvation, all sort of, you know, rolled up in a ball. But what makes this section unique is, first of all, there's very little rebuke for any particular sin. We're going to get one line of it in chapter 24, and it's not going to be clear who is being rebuked and what they've done wrong. You'll see that there. You get here visions, as I said, of a future redemption, which includes not only physical restoration, but spiritual proximity to God. It's going to sound a lot like some of the prakim that come at the end of Yeshaya. Right, the parts that are alleged to be a different book because they're so different, they're not so different. You find them here in 24 to 27. The images of consolation and restoration to God. There is, as I said, also lots and lots of poetry. So there's a lot to see here. I gave you, first of all, on your sheet, at number 9, questions for preparation. You can blame Louise. It was a good idea. Since I'm asking for people to prepare in advance, it makes sense to highlight for people what to prepare, as opposed to just reading it through, which is also, I think, valuable and probably the most valuable thing. There are particular things that are worth seeing. So I gave you 5 items here. Chiefly, the first question there is going to talk about a land being destroyed. Which land is it that's being destroyed? Don't assume it's Israel. It's not necessarily so. And as you read it, you can find evidence. Similarly, the second question there, is this about the destruction of Jews that's coming or non-Jews? And I gave you some hints as to where you could find evidence. What is the message of the emphasis on wine and song? We will not get to that today. But I think it's a fascinating thing the way he has a lot to talk about with wine and song in the middle of the parak. As well as a particular song that will be heard from the ends of the earth in sentences 16 and 17. And at the end of the chapter, in this image, at the end of it, there's this thing about the host of heaven being punished. And what exactly that's talking about is a really good question. There's a lot to talk about in this parak. We're going to talk about some of it. The basic outline is what I gave you in number 10. It starts out, the land, whichever land it is utterly destroyed. Your great social status, whatever that is not going to protect you. You can see I wrote this on the sheet. I'm not sure why I'm reading it out loud. But I feel like I wrote it, so, you know. That's going to be followed with specifics of the destruction and the end of all joy. And then only a few will remain, but then they will be summoned to honor God. And then you get this song that I mentioned coming from the ends of the earth. followed, as I said, by fleeing, and then some kind of vision of the end of days. So, yeah, this may be best done in a non-verse-by-verse way. I think this actually lends itself to that format of not doing verse-by-verse to avoid getting lost. And so what I tried to do instead is give you this table in number 11. And what I would like to do is just give you the overview first of three different ways to understand what's going on in the Perek. And then we're going to go through the sources for each one. Okay? By the end of it, we'll know it. Maybe. So the first view is Rashi's view. Rashi has pride of place. He says, this is about the future of the Jewish people at an unspecified time dealing with unspecified enemies. So that the opening verses of the chapter are simply going to be about the Jews falling to some enemy because of something we've done wrong. The Jews, however, are going to survive, some of them, in their exile. They will be summoned to honor God. And then there is a song that Yeshaya is going to hear. He will hear it from either the site of the Beis HaMikdash or from the heavens, Me'achorei HaPargod, from the heavenly court. And it's going to be a song describing how we suffer before the redemption. And then eventually there will be monuments to the righteous, and the nations will fall. That's Rashi's take. It's about the general flow of Jewish history, which involves a lot of downs, but then eventually there's an up. That's Rashi's read. Malbim says it is about the fate of the Jews, but it's immediate. So it's about the 10 tribes being exiled by the Assyrians. That's the beginning. And then Yehuda remaining in the land, and the Jews who are in exile. And then Yeshaya says he heard songs about King Chizkiyahu. The songs are about King Chizkiyahu and about the future of the Jews after Chizkiyahu, which will be this, again, down future followed by an up. And at the end, there will be a war against Yerushalayim, and the nations will be defeated, and they will be judged, and they'll abandon idolatry. That is Malbim. Right? And then you have Abarbanel. And Abarbanel says, no. This is all about the time of Mashiach. This is all about the time of Mashiach, and the nations are the ones who are described here as falling before a time of judgment and Tchiyat HaMeitim, the resurrection of the dead. So three different schools. Okay? Again, summing it up, Rashi, long-term future of the Jews. Malbim, a little more specific. It's about the fall to the Assyrians and what follows from there before jumping to an ultimate judgment. And Abarbanel, who says it's actually about the nations of the world. It's not about the Jews. It's about the world as a whole. Okay? Those are the different takes. So let's now unpack that, you know, and see it a little bit more precisely. I didn't translate the sources from 12 to 22, partially because I didn't think we were going to get there, to be frank, and partially because I just done all the other stuff. But we're going to get through this anyway. So we're on page 993 in the Stone Tanakh. Hinei Hashem bokeh haaretz uvolka. He likes this word bokeh. You've got bokeh haaretz uvolka, and then in Gimel, he bok tibok haaretz vihibos tibos. He's very into the wordplay, the rhyming, the use of a root in multiple formats. You know, he's going to keep on doing that. Look at the Hebrew. Avla navla umlala navla tevel umlalu. It's stunning what he's doing. Stunning in the sense of I don't know what he did. Yeah, I mean the whole perek is like that. If you jump down to Pasuk Ted Zion, sentence 16, right? Leave aside ruzi li oily, because we have to explain what those words mean. But bogdim bagadu uveged bogdim bagadu pachad bafachas bafach. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
It almost sounds like nonsense. So.
Right. And it's hard. The result of it is hard Hebrew. But it's just Yeshaya. I mean, I think I said it when we started Yeshaya last year, that parts of this book sound like they should have been rapped, you know, as opposed to being recited, in the sense that in rap you spit out syllables that, you know, just sound good together, almost irrespective of the meaning of the words. That's what he's doing here. It's just stunning. The way that he does this. But yeah, we're not going to focus on the poetry of it and on the word by word, or yeah, we'll never see Parakleth Hay. But the opening unit here in it, right? The opening unit sentences 1 to 12, which describes the destruction and the end of joy, right? Behold, Hashem is emptying the land, making it deserted. He will distort its appearance, scatter its inhabitants. And then in Pasuk Bet, I do have to mention this because you can't not. It's so glaring. The way that everything is flattened out, right? Everybody is vulnerable. So he says, Ka'am, ka'kohein, ka'eved, ka'donav, ka'shivcha, ka'gvirta, ka'koneh, ka'mocher, ka'malveh, ka'loveh, ka'noshek, ka'asher, no'shevo. He says, everybody's going to be the same. The nation and the priests, the slave and the master, the maid and the mistress, the buyer, the seller, the lender, the borrower, the creditor, the person who's in default, all of them are going to suffer the same fate of destruction. That's the message. Everything is, as they put here in the English, well, I think, utterly emptied, utterly despoiled. So look at Rashi, which I brought you here in number 12. He says, Harei nevua zu puranut li Yisrael. He says, this prophecy is a punishment for the Jews. And that's the key word. It's for the Jews. Because he has already said that there is going to be consolation, Shni Belem Nechamazu, Ve'im Asidim L'Oz L'Fanat Sarah Rabbah, before that consolation comes, they're going to be in trouble. So Rashi says, all of this is about the fall of the Jews. And then it jumped to sentence 16, back in the text. After his description of all of the desolation, he says, from the edge of the earth we have heard songs. Glory for the righteous. Tzvi LaTzadik is the Hebrew. So Rashi says, what is that referring to? What is this from the ends of the earth? Songs for the righteous. What exactly are you referring to? So Rashi says, if you take a look at number 13, Targum Yonatan, he says, Yonatan ben Uziel, has this as mi beit makdisha. The end of the earth means the Beis HaMikdash. Which is kind of funny, because usually we think of the Beis HaMikdash as the center, right? As the middle. It could be he doesn't take kanaf to mean the edge, to be the end. He says, Shehu besof eretz Yisrael b'mizrach, although the end, yeah, then he does justify it. He says, well, it's the eastern end of the land of Israel. And the part that I skipped in the Rashi there, he talks about how that works, that it's the eastern end of the land of Israel. The UN, I think, is a little confused regarding that issue.
Don't tell the right wing of Israel.
Yes. Yes, no, there's this whole other thing. Yeah. Sorry. Vani omer lefi pshuto. And he says, I say, simply, that it's not from the Beis HaMikdash, but rather, Shamanu me'achorei ha-pargod. Literally, we have heard from behind the curtain, which is a rabbinic reference to up in God's throne room, where God is describing what is going to be, conferring with the malachim. So, from up there we heard, Sha'asidim lahalo zmiros mikanaf ha'aret. We have heard that there are going to be songs from the end of the earth. Umayin azmirot, what are those songs? Tzvi LaTzadik. What does Tzvi LaTzadik mean? Tzvi means desire. Right? El Eretz Tzvi, right, does not mean the land of the deer. I'm sorry. The Gemara takes it that way. The Gemara in Gittin does that with Eretz Tzvi, saying it's the land that is like a deer in the sense that when we live there, it is able to hold us, but when the Jews are exiled, it shrivels up like the hide taken off of the deer. And that's, don't get me wrong, there's reason for that drash. Meaning, The literal Eretz Tzvi is land of desire. Tzvi, Vitzaviat in Aramaic, is the translation of when somebody wants something. She wanted is Vitzaviat. It's Eretz Chemda, essentially. A desirable land. But the reason why you would do a drash and say Tzvi is dear is because we have the phrase Eretz Chemda. Why do you do Eretz Tzvi? What were you trying to do with that? And the answer is to provide me with a second layer of meaning, which is being like a deer. Remember, drash has a much better ear for language than pshat. That's consistently true. Pshat is willing to run roughshod over language in order to just get, here's my story. Drash, on the other hand, is so careful about language that you lose the story as a whole in layers and layers and layers of drash. But the point here is that Tzvi Latzadik, he's struggling with what does that mean? The songs are going to say Tzvi Latzadik. So he says Tzvi is like Matseva here, a monument. Matsevot Komat Latzadikim, monuments for the righteous. So Rashi reads it as he hears a song from the Beis Hamikdash, from the heavenly court, whatever, about how there are going to be zimirot mikanaf haaretz, songs from the end of the earth, which are going to physical end, not end of the world. About monuments to the righteous, but the nations are going to fall. That's Rashi's read. And you can go through the psukim and you'll see that that's a consistent way to look at the parak. Maish, can you hit the door, please? Just the floor noise is a little distracting for me. I didn't answer the question. So that's view number one. Okay, this is the general flow of the parak. However, and Rashi doesn't do anything, by the way, it's really mind-boggling. Rashi basically ignores the end of the chapter. Let's read those psukim, just so you understand why this is such a big deal that Rashi almost pretends it's not there. The bottom of page 993. Psukim Chav Aleph to Chav Gimel, sentences 21 to 23. He has almost nothing on this. Vaya Bayomahu, it's going to be on that day. Yifkod Hashem al Tzva HaMarom BaMarom. God will visit upon, right, Yifkod, to take an accounting of the heavenly hosts in heaven, Valmalcheha Adama Allah Adama, and on the earthly kings upon the land. By the way, what phrase in the Rosh Hashanah davening do we get? Letana Tokev. Lifkod al Tzvam Marom Badin. Right? It's pulled from Yeshaya. So you can keep that in mind as a Dvar Torah for next Rosh Hashanah. V'usfu asefa asir albor v'sugru almasger. Once again, he's just playing with sounds. But they will be gathered. V'usfu asefa. They will be gathered as a gathering. Asir, and asir is a prisoner. On the bor. The bor is the prison. Right? Like Yosef, samuoti babor. So it's a pit, but that's how it becomes a prison also. Or, you know, I think they render it here as dungeon. But yes. Visugru almasger, they will be imprisoned. Umerov yamim ipakedu. And he renders it here, like Rashi, their sins of many days will be recalled, meaning those who are being judged. The kings and whoever it is up in the heavens. Vichafra halavana uvosha hachama. The moon will be literally ashamed. The Bosha Haman, the sun, will be humiliated. They reverse that. Fine. Kimalach Hashem Tzvakot Bahar Tzion uBirushalayim, because God reigns on Mount Zion in Yerushalayim. V'neged Zekeinav Kavod, and there will be honor, there will be glory for his elders. So you read that, and Rashi has almost nothing to say. This is the prediction of what's going to be in the future. But there's so much going on. How could you not help me, Rashi? But he doesn't. So we turn to Malbim. And Malbim's read. So first of all, as I said to you, Malbim believes that this is about the exile under the Assyrians. Right? The 10 tribes going into Galut. So if you flip the page on the source sheet to source number 14, the Malbim there talks about the exile. But in order to introduce you to this Malbim, we need to actually see the Pasuk. This is Pasuk Hey, sentence 5. V'ha'aretz chanafa tachas yosheveha. The land was chaneif, under its residence. So they render it here as unfaithful. Chaneif. What is chanufa?
Flattery,
right? Is usually the way we to chanfer somebody, right? It's to flatter. Sometimes the term is used in Tanakh to mean one who is cruel, in which case this doesn't fit. But it's often about flattery or promising something that one is not going to deliver. So some of the commentators pick up on that. But I'm more fixed on what's coming next. What is it that the inhabitants did wrong? Avru Torot. They violated Torot. Okay. Chalfu Chok. Which again is that Yeshaya language. Chalfu Chok. Right? They traded in the law, or they violated it. Heferu Berit Olam. They tore up the eternal covenant. So remember, when you approach Malbim, Malbim is not going to be willing to say, this is just three different ways to say they broke the rules. There have to be three different rules that are being broken here.
And it feels like it's getting more and more egregious.
Doesn't it? It feels like it's building up, and that part of that is because we're trained to read Tanakh that way. That when you see things in a sequence, the worst is always at the end. The strongest is always at the end. But I think you're right about it, especially like term Heferu is to tear up a covenant. It's very strong. So now let's look at Malbim in source number 14. He says, these are the sins of the Jews. He says, first of all, Israel. It's talking about this as a vision of the destruction of the land, meaning Israel, because of the sins of Israel. And the word that was used in Yeshaya, he talked about an Allah upon the land, and Allah is a curse. So he said, not Allah, that's different. The Allah here is a curse. I'm just trying to find the pasuk where he used the word. Where was the word Allah? It was here. Oh, there it is, in Pasuk Vav. Kain Allah Achla Eretz. Yes, it can just be a vow, but it's usually a vow associated with a penalty. Like, if they break this, then this punishment will happen. So he says, that's the reference to Parashas Nitzavim, about a person who leaves the covenant, V'rab Tzabo Kal Ha'Allah HaKetuvah B'Sefer Hazeh, that this curse will befall them. And then he says, Hadatot Heim Shalosh. There are three types of law. Tiv'it, natural law. Nimusit, popular convention. And Elokit, divine. Hadat HaTiv'it, the first bullet point, the number 14, the natural law, Hi HaMarcheket HaAvel, that distances corruption. It says, don't be corrupt, right? Do no evil. U'mekarevet HaYosher, and it brings close righteousness, straight, be straight. Ba'ofen she'yizkaimu chevraso anashim, in a way that society will endure, and so that they don't engage in murder, Hamas, and so on. That's one way in which they broke the rules. Second, dat nimusit, social convention. Hima shetesudar mechacham umechachamim, that is what a sage or a group of sages arranges. Lefi hazman v'amakom, based on the needs of that time, based on the needs of that place. L'archik hamegunet ulekarev hana'et, to distance you from that which is disgraceful, and to get you to do that which is appropriate. And then Vadata Elokit, the divine law, Tesudar Me'ashem Yitbaracha Yedei Navi. That comes from God via a prophet, Leheshir Ha'anashim Ala Hatzlacha Ha'amitit Ba'osher HaNefesh, to get people to true, full success, and to full development. That's the third. So he's saying the Jews broke all three of these. That's why he understands it. So Torot is natural law. Yes. They lose all three, correct. Torot is natural law. Chok is that which society has established as well. And then Brit is the Brit with Hashem. That's the way that he reads it. Don't be bothered by the fact that Torot, which we think of as being a very religious term, is now suddenly about Dat Tivit. That evidently does not bother him. This is about natural law. So he says, in sentence 13, it speaks about the few who remain. That refers to the Jews who remain in Yehuda, meaning Chizkiyahu's group, as you see in source number 15. about Chizkiyahu, as well as those who remain, Be'eretz Galutam, those who remain in exile. And then you get to the songs, these mysterious songs from the end of the earth. So take a look at what Malbim does with that in source number 16. These songs that sing Tzvi Latzadik, and this Razi Li, Oili, what is that about? So he says, Gam Shamanu Zmiro Tzvi Upe'er, Asher Yizamru L'Chizkiyahu HaTzadik. He says, I've heard these songs of splendor, and Tzvi like Chemda, is the way he's reading it, right? Desire and splendor that they're going to sing for Chizkiyahu, he is the Tzadik. So unlike Rashi, who said Tzvi LaTzadik is for the Tzadikim in general, Malbim says no, it's songs about Chizkiyahu. Shebizchuto nihiyata hatshua hazot. In his merit came this great salvation. Razi li, oi li. Well, that has to be a negative because it ends in oi, right? So he says, misaper, it tells Eich Nisgalulo Od Sodos Harbe, how Yeshaya has more secrets revealed to him. Vodiulo, and they told him, Kigam Shuazulo Tia Shuat Olamim, that when they're rescued from Sancheirav and the Assyrians, that's not going to last forever. Vich Yavru Odal Rashay Am Kodesh Kamatzarot, and that there is more trouble coming. So Razi Li, Razi like Raz. Raz is a secret. Right. I've heard more secrets, he says, and oily because of the terrible things that are going to befall us, until you get to the end. And this vision of Hashem judging the heavens and judging the kings on earth and the moon and the sun. What in the world are you talking about? So Malbim says in source number 17, V'chofra, talking about the fate of the moon and the sun and how they will be humiliated. He says it's the end of Avodah Zarah. Az lo yitnu od elokut upe'er lachama ulavana. No longer will they assign glory and divinity to the sun and the moon. They are going to recognize Shashem hu asiba harishona, that God is the first cause. Vu ashofeya harishon v'acharon, he is the first and last influence. Hu mashgiach b'shamayim mimav al aretz mitachat, he is the one who is overseeing from the heavens above and on the earth below. Yan ki melech Hashem b'artzion b'Yerushalayim, because Hashem is king on Mount Zion as well as in Jerusalem. So Malbim says that the end of the chapter, these last three sentences, is about the nations gathering to fight Yerushalayim. They will be defeated, they will be judged, and then they will abandon their idolatry. Clear?
So the idolatry was, in this case, worshipping the moon and the sun.
Yeah.
It's having more power than that.
Correct. So we have Rashi. This is about the general future of the Jews and ultimately the punishment of the idolaters. It's Malbim who says it starts with the fall to the Assyrians. The exile of the 10 tribes. And then there is we're happy, there's a song about Chizkiyahu, and then things get worse, and then ultimately there will be this war again in Yerushalayim, very much like the end of Zechariah. And then you have the third take. I keep looking at the clock because I restarted for the new chapter, and now my timer is off. Okay. So the third view is that this is about the nations falling in a time of Mashiach, but it's the nations, specifically before judgment and Chiyat HaMeitim, the resurrection of the dead. That's what we're talking about here. So, the image begins, the chapter begins, with the world, the nations, falling to Mashiach. And this is the read of Radak, and this is the read of Abarbanel. But now I have a problem. Because Pasuk Hey talked about violating Torot, Chok, Brit. When did the nations violate that? They didn't have those things. What do you mean? You know what this reminds me of? I can't resist. It's Parsha Toldos, last week, but it's good enough. The beginning of Parsha Toldos, when Hashem says, Ekev Asher Shema Abraham Bikoli, right, he's going to give to Yitzchak, gives the bracha to Yitzchak, right? Because Avram listened to my voice, Vayishmor Mishmarti, he guarded my Mishmaret, Mitzvotai, Chukotai, V'Torotai. And all the Mefarshim want to know, what are these Mitzvot, Chukim, and Torot? And that's what leads the Gemara in Yuma to say that Avram observed all the Mitzvot. Because look, it says, he fulfilled Torot. Mitzvotai, Mishmarti, Mitzvotai, Chukotai, Torotai. So that's what it's like here. right? Chukim, Tarot, and all of that. Yes, Moshe.
You couldn't have a more perfect proof of that than right now. You have the two largest countries in the world led by people who have nothing to do with any truth. Just total despots who lie all the time. Perfectly kills those roots.
Only those two countries? Because I can name some others.
I can do all of that.
Don't point the finger at them, my friends. So if you take a look at source number 18, Radak explains how you can read Tarot, Chukim, and Brit as being about the nations of the world as well. He says, Avru Tarot, what does that mean? Because they overly oppressed us, right? The idea that there's a brit, there's a covenant that God has with the nations of the world. Yes, we are in their power, but not to oppress us too much. The Gemara at the end of Ksuvos, and then Heferu Brit Olam, they destroyed the covenant, meaning what we saw in Amos about Edom v'lo zachar brit achim. They didn't remember the covenant of brothers when they oppressed us, and of course they're not the only ones who are our brothers, as he notes, Ammon, Moab, Yishmael. We have a nice big family of people who all like to beat up on us. So Radak says, it's about what they did to us. But Abarbanel says, no, it's not about what they did to us. It's about what they did to God. And he renders this differently in what I brought you here in number 19. And I think that's the last source we're going to get to look at for today. But he says, "Hineh psukim ha'elah kulam efshar sheyifurashu gam ken al korban ha'umot." He says you could read this as being about the fall of the nations, as opposed to being about the fall of the Jews. He explains. He says, "I'll tell you how you know it." You know, maybe we'll come back to the Abarbanel because I don't want to rush this. But he is going to explain Torot, Chukim, Brit, about the obligations of the nations of the world and how they have failed to keep up their end of the bargain, not like Radak in their relationship with us, but rather in terms of their relationship with Hashem. And that's why these things are gonna happen to them. So again, what we've seen here within this perek, as we start the new discussion, right? We're done with the downfall of the ten foes, and now we're in a new phase, which is describing what's going to happen at the end of days. Either you take the view of Rashi and Malbim that this is about the fate of the Jews in the future, whether Rashi long term or Malbim short term, followed by long term, and then Abarbanel that it's actually about the fate of the nations of the world. Ultimately ending in the same place, which is this vision of a future cataclysm. So we'll have to come back to that and wrap up Perek Chaf Dalet next time, as well as we're going to get started on Perek Chaf Hey, God willing, chapter 25. So before I send out the source sheets, at least read the Perek. I think that would be wise.
Janine. Radak does not discuss Chok.
Sorry?
Radak
does not discuss Chok. Yeah, I think he's less concerned about the individual terms. He's not a Malbim. Although he is often very language attuned. I don't want to, remove that. Okay, so there's more to see here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.